Talk given Friday, July 21st, 1978. If the total commitment required of us to live the religious life in the true sense involves a very intimate touch with living in the world, more intimate than that of the ordinary person, we must clearly see why this is so. The man who lives religiously is the man who at least is beginning to live compassionately. The more religious the nature of one's life, the deeper is the compassion that animates his entire relationship with all the world. This is by no means an easy task, an extremely difficult task. As and when that compassionateness reaches great depths, it means that the person is living quite selflessly. That is to say, not in accordance with fixed ideas of unselfishness. Unselfishness understood as the opposite of what we commonly call selfishness. Because that sort of commitment merely involves a conflict in one's own psyche. Virtue is true virtue only when it transcends the conflict of all the ambivalence of the psyche and its dualism. So that it is not a question of unselfishness versus selfishness within oneself. It means that one's attentiveness, that one's consciousness so completely includes the total situation that there is no sense of separation between what, for convenience, we call the self and the not-self. We use those terms, that is to say, the truly religious man does use those terms purely for convenience. That is all. But because his compassion is so deep, so true and profound, there is no such thing as excluding himself from all others. There is no sense of otherness. There is only the full consciousness of total relationship. It is not necessary at all to analyze this relationship. One may see intellectually the analytical process in the appreciation and exercising of this relationship. But that is a very secondary matter. The fact is that the person's whole heart, his whole mind, is really at one. It is a unified mind. And in this case, it is truly mind which is active. The psyche, which is one's own personal mental, one's own personal thought and feeling process, is now so purified that it is the perfect instrument, the nexus for the activity of transcendence through him who no longer resists that activity. So much so is this the case that functioning in perfect harmony with this compassion is true intelligence. And this intelligence doesn't ask questions. What is the activity of transcendence that is taking place? Because if you ask a question like, what is the activity of this transcendence, then you are trying to limit the unlimited. You're trying to split up the whole by separating something which is some special thing, which is regarded as, oh, this is the activity of transcendence, but that is not the activity of transcendence. Now that makes one's life unholy, unwhole, unwholesome. You see? So where this real intelligence and real compassion functions in simultaneity, in complete harmony, then that person functions selflessly in the true sense, and he doesn't in any way obstruct the flow of transcendent energy. Thereby, all our activities in the world, in our waking state from the time we get up till the time we go to sleep, in our sleeping state all the way round in sleep, it is transcendence in action through man who thereby, the individual man who thereby is really representative man, Homo sapiens, Homo socialis in the true sense. Now, of course, we can begin to sense the tremendous meaning of this total commitment. Which of us acts that way? Which of us lives that way? How many of us, if any, are free of our moods, our specific separatist feelings and thoughts made ill by our greeds, our fears, our reactions of violence, and all the rest of it. How many of us are like that? And you see, this is a very important point. In fact, it's a supremely important point. If we are capable, if we grow into the capacity to be able to look fully into ourselves all the time, that is to say, not in this self-introspective way which is self-concerned, but which is truly observant of what is going on in the particular individual whom we call myself. If we are capable of doing that, our consciousness, our total awareness functions fully as it is intended in all probability in the scheme of things and to fulfill the purpose of our existence, that we should function with that kind of all-inclusive consciousness, fully awakened consciousness. There is nothing hidden away in the depths of the subconscious. At the same time, we do not ferret it out and lay out every bit of the subconscious and place it in the shop window. We just let it function freely and completely because the psyche is pure. You see? Now, it is this kind of consciousness in the individual man which affects the consciousness of all mankind. See, a completely awakened consciousness functioning unself-concernedly affects the total consciousness of mankind. This is how and why the great teachers, the true teachers, have exercised an influence so mysterious, so profound, that centuries after the death of the living teacher living in the body, what they taught lives on and affects mankind all the time, without mankind knowing it, undeterred by those thousands of men who live contrarily to that supreme light of consciousness which the great ones shed over the world. Perhaps this may help us to understand how and why it is that whilst the intellectual fashions and the philosophies of the world come and go, the simple religious teachings just live on in their simplicity and keep on affecting coming generations. However much intellectuals and philosophers spin out specialized interpretations of the great words of truth, the simple words of truth, however much they may spin out all sorts of systems of thought and so forth, which tend up, at least up to a point, to spoil the original teaching, to mislead people, nevertheless never survive. The truth lives on. You have often heard me say here, the truth needs no defense. It doesn't need anyone's help. It is completely self-sufficient. It stands on its own feet. And if we can appreciate this point, really appreciate it, in our own efforts to live the religious life in its fullness, we will be free from any anxiety whether we are doing the right thing, whether we are growing in the right way, and so forth and so forth. All that disappears. You see? Now, understanding such things, we can let all our life energy function through us freely, as rightly as possible, because we are animated by that utter commitment, by that compassionateness and that intelligence, in such a way that the least faultiness slips through us. We do our best in the real sense of the word, free of carping criticism, but full of intelligent, correct observation of what we are doing. If there is intelligent and correct observation of what we are doing, and if we do live by the law of compassionateness, which includes complete compassion for our own self also, then the carping criticism, which only produces remorse and all sorts of conflicts in the psyche, is out. We are no longer enslaved either by optimism on the one hand or pessimism on the other. Optimism, when we feel very self-satisfied, oh, that was well done, jolly good, we are getting on. Where are we getting on? We are still in the same cosmos that we ever were. There's nowhere else to go. You see, there is something which is so difficult to appreciate. The body can move from here to there. Space has a meaning for a finite, concrete, physical object. But the mind, where is here for the mind? Where is there for the mind? Those things have no meaning for the mind. Mind in itself, pure mind, in the grand sense of the term, is energy. We find the manifestation of any energy, of all the forms of energy, in particular localities as and when that energy is functioning and making itself apparent to us through a particular physical medium, not otherwise. Take one of the simplest cases, electrical energy. Can we go out anywhere and collect electrical energy per se? We can't. But do certain things, set up a concrete physical apparatus, and then if you let that energy flow in a certain way through what we call an electric bulb, you'll get a light. Let it flow through a radiator and we'll get heat and so forth. So you see, somewhat like that, never stretch these analogies too far, somewhat like that, that energy which is mind, pure mind, is free of the limitations of space. When it functions through the purified psyche, then it manifests in that particular person who is located in space and time. So you see, let us not ask what is the activity of transcendence. All activities of the compassionate, intelligent person, totally committed to the religious life, are the innumerable activities expressing the one and only total activity of transcendence. How wonderful, how marvelous is religious living. It's breathtaking. Now, if we appreciate this, we will also appreciate the meaning, the deep meaning of mindfulness, of true attentiveness. The real samasati, which the Buddha spoke of, which all the great teachers taught. We are, despite what our intellects may postulate to ourselves, partly due to our own personal vanity and egoism, despite that, we mix up mindfulness with thinking. with the thinking process. When we say that we are mindfully observing the psychical process that goes on inside us, we may be examining it thoughtfully, but not mindfully. What is our thought process in the ordinary way? It's an analytical talking activity, an analytical speech activity. And any analysis involves fragmentation. Something is abstracted out of the totality. And we talk about that. And the moment we talk about something, then oneself, to start with, as the talking subject, has already separated himself from the talked about object. There is the first sundering of the unity, if you like. And all this talking about anything, however sublime, exalted, wise-sounding it may be, all this talking about anything is an activity of our conditioned brains. Our brain, which is the concretest part, expression of mind. It is an expression of mind, the concretest expression, but it is terribly conditioned. It is limited. And therefore, this limited instrument, the brain, limits all that it talks about. It only draws from its own pictures of the past. Not the actuality of the past, because the actuality of the past doesn't stand still. It moves on constantly, changing, the becoming process. And the past is embodied here now in its essential living totality, and not in terms of our little mental card index, our mental constructs, which are fixations, which are fossils. Do you follow this? It's perhaps it may sound easy, but it is actually very difficult. Very difficult to absorb wholly in its full significance and in its living meaning. So you see, this is what thought does, the thinking process, as we call it. Clear, sane, rational thinking has its proper place in all activities which involve a technical know-how. Where the knowledge of the mechanism of the routine of life is concerned, there what we commonly call thinking and being thoughtful has its rightful place. Also, it has a rightful place when, as the result of deep inspiration, profound inspiration, which is formless, beyond concept, beyond verbalization, affects our psyche in such a manner that when it has to apply that sort of inspiration to things material, then the thought process must, in the ordinary sense, must of necessity come into play. And then it will be clear, sane, rational. It won't be senseless chatter. It won't be confused, befogged, and befogging ape-like activity. You see the importance of not talking, said he who talks so much. Now, that is the activity of nature, of nature and effect of the thinking process, that it abstracts and out of the totality and splits it up into fragments. Now, mind is something quite different. Mind is the whole thing. Mind does not specialize. It functions totally as the unfragmented whole. But the great mystery and the marvel at the same time is that although it functions as the unfragmented whole all the time, it expresses itself through finite instruments of expression, namely living human beings. And in the particular sphere and environment and circumstance of each being, it manifests its wholeness, its totality, its unfragmentedness through the finite, limited in space, time, and matter, individual, activity, and person. Now here is a meaning, a profound meaning of incarnation. The incarnation of the divine that so many millions of people have faithfully believed in. This is one of the meanings of it. It is not as if a divine being who is merely a projection out of my own imperfect, fuddled brain came down to earth from heaven or the 33rd story of the building or whatever it was and incarnated, enfleshed itself. Not at all. It's very difficult to overemphasize all that is involved in total commitment. One of the factors which will help total commitment is faith in the true sense. When, for instance, any of the great teachers spoke or wrote or merely looked at the one who came to them, he made such an impress upon the total being of the person that somehow or other, as a matter of course, that being felt, yes, this is it. And so he had faith. He did not blindly believe any particular idea or teaching or whatever it was that was presented to him. But this faith was total. It would be unkind to ask him to explain it. It is there. It is love in a grand sense, the love that knows no fear, the love that makes the person utterly free in the presence of the Holy One. And therefore, that commitment was total, with a totality in which separateness or contradiction of any sort had no place. And it's very interesting to note that with, as far as I'm aware, all the great religious teachers and the great religions, that faith arises in the listener for the Holy One himself as a person, in that which he transmits to you. I'm using the word transmit deliberately rather than what he teaches you, because our word teaching is too much associated with a string of ideas or facts or whatever it is. But what he transmits to you, which includes his words and actions and behavior and all the rest of it. So, in the Dhamma, the Dharma, the religion, that which relates you completely and totally to the ultimate reality. And in the company, those who are similarly affected. So you have in Buddhism the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And the newcomer has faith in them. You have Jesus the Christ, the teaching, the kingdom of heaven is within you, etc., and so forth and so forth. And the one and only commandment he gave, which was his very own, love ye one another as I have loved you. And the church, the body of people, the congregation of people who were animated by such faith. So now, we have to get in tune with the depths of total commitment. Don't ask, but how can I, in my circumstance, do this sort of thing? I couldn't even begin to earn a living in order to do this. perfectly true. But if you care, just naturally, spontaneously care, you can't make yourself care in this divine sense. If you care, you won't be able to help yourself letting your life energy flow in this way. And then the miracle will keep on happening. And the proof of the miracle keeping on happening, the greatest proof, is that you are quite unaware of it. Look, you are all living bodies at the moment. There's no one here who is dead. You see? You're all alive. It is this mysterious thing, life, which is functioning through you, and you are alive. You are unaware of how life works. You don't know. What is this mystery? Now, if you ask what is this mystery, and the intellect has the greed and the stupidity to want an answer or a set of answers, well, you will be gradually dismembered in your whole being, bit by bit. Don't do it. Just live. Look how the child lives, healthily, happily, dancing, singing, knocking down the next door, her next child, quarreling, fighting, suddenly coming to mummy or daddy and making love. The beauty of life. In the same way, this total commitment and the way it works, you will be unaware of it. The spontaneity of life will remain untrammeled. And in that lies the true happiness of the individual living being. Without that being getting conscious of that inner happiness, even though outwardly the circumstance may be such that that person goes through grief,